Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Rawson, and I'd like to welcome you to another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. We've been excited to hear about all the great feedback we've been getting from around the world, as we have listeners in many, many different places. And me and Pamela are so excited to be able to bring the guests to you every month from around the world, from different modalities and teaching backgrounds, and just really, really gifted people. And tonight is no exception. So we're going to get started because we've got a lot to cover. I know generally we were kind of talking about this before the show got started, that the guest that we have on this evening, we've actually had him on a number of times because we just love his work. And I also know that we have a tendency to go over with him because of how much we have to talk about. So before we get started, I just want to mention to everybody, if you want to find out more about this show or other shows, and to go back and find the replays either for this show or for any of the other shows, we're up to about 2,000 shows now, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Pamela, always great to have you on. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm very good. I'm happy to be here. It's kind of an odd night for us, since usually we're on the first Monday of the month, but I'm happy to be here on the last Monday as well.
Yeah, we originally had him lined up for the second Monday, and I had found out about a concert of my stepdaughter, and we basically all had to play musical chairs, so I want to just say thank you and gratitude to both of you for being flexible, and here we are on April 27th for this show. And with that, go ahead, Pam.
Well, no problem. My name is Pam Latour, and I'm the co-host with Mark Rawson. And tonight we have, as Mark said, someone who's been with us a few times. His name is Garnet Schulhauser. And Garnet is a retired lawyer who lives in Canada, and he can tell us a little bit about that. He looks like he's an amazing family man by his bio, and he's written some wonderful books. The last time we talked to him, he wrote a book called Dancing on a Stamp, which was published in 2012. And recently, and I don't know really if it's been published yet, we have to talk to him about that, he's written another book. And the other book is called Dancing Forever with Spirit, which sounds amazing. So without any more delay, let's bring him on. Welcome, Garnet.
Hi, Pam and Mark. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
We're very good.
Thank you
good.
For having
Thanks.
Me.
So if I remember correctly, I think Dancing on a Stamp, did that come out in 2007?
2012, Mark.
Oh, 2012.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think what I'm thinking of is from our original interview, we were talking about how you met Albert, and I think Albert was a number of years before the book was actually written. So we're
I met Albert in 2007. Yeah.
Yes, there we go. I knew 2007 came into it some way.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Pam.
Well, I was getting a strange echo for a little while. Can everybody hear me all right?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay,
I was
good.
Getting the echo too, Pam.
Yeah, I knew you were because it stopped you from talking because I could hear the repeat. But now it seems to be gone, so let's keep our fingers crossed. I wanted to talk to you, Garnet. Can I call you Garnet?
Absolutely.
Okay. About this new book. What is it exactly? I know you have the premise of the first book, which was Dancing on a Stamp, which, by the way, I love these titles, was primarily about this a spirit guide that you have by the name of Albert, who who Mark mentioned earlier. Does Dancing Forever with Spirit carry the same theme forward with a different message, or how can you describe it to us?
Well, it's a sequel to Dancing on a Stamp. It's more revelations from my spirit guide Albert with different messages, and only this time it's a different way of doing it. In my first book, Dancing on a Stamp, we basically had a dialogue, and it was initially he appeared as a homeless man to me in physical form, and we spoke, and I asked questions and he answered, and then after the first three meetings we had carried on our dialogue just by telepathy. He didn't show up anymore, And so the Dancing on a Stamp was basically this dialogue between Albert and I as we chatted and discussed various topics. Dancing Forever is Spirit, Albert's in the picture again, except it's in a sort of a much different way of showing me his what he wants me to see and his revelations. And how it happened was that I had, as I was discussing with Mark a bit earlier, Albert had sort of been constantly in my life. Whenever I had a question, I could just ask him and he would answer the question, and he was sort of always there. And then he kind of disappeared for a couple of months. And I was getting a little bit concerned because he had told me after I'd finished writing my first book that I needed to write a second and a third and a fourth, and I'm not sure where he's going to let me stop, but that I had to get going on it. So I wanted to start writing my second manuscript, but I needed his input. I mean, obviously, all the wisdom was coming from him. So I was a little concerned when he had disappeared for a couple of months, and then he showed up again, and it was quite different because I was sleeping in my bed, and I heard a noise or something that made me wake up, and I sat up, and I saw standing in the doorway of my bedroom this sort of ghost-like ethereal figure. And as it moved closer towards the foot of my bed, then I could see clearly that it was my old friend Albert, looking like the homeless man that when he first met me, except he was in astral form, and so his body was sort of like semi-transparent and shimmering a bit. And I said, "Oh, well, you know, hi, Albert. That's great. I've been, waiting to see you again. What's up?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to take you on some astral trips because I want to show you some things that you can write about in your second book. And my view is that a picture is worth 1,000 words. So I'm going to take you and show you places so that you can see for yourself as opposed to me just telling you about them." And I said, "Well, Albert, that's fine, but, how long are we going to be gone? Do I have to tell my wife where I'm going, and who's going to take out my garbage in the morning, and, do I need a passport?" And he said, he smiled, he said, "No, you're going to be traveling out of body astrally. You'll be back in your body before the morning. Your wife won't even know you're gone. It'll just happen smoothly, and there'll be no wrinkles or any other hiccups, because traveling astrally is much easier than traveling how you guys travel on Earth. There's no security lineups. There's no cramped seating on an airplane. It's a much easier way to travel." And I said, "Well, great, let's go." So he reached out and he grabbed my hand and he just pulled me towards him. And he basically pulled my astral body out of my physical body. I turned around and looked back, and there my physical body was still sound asleep in bed beside my wife and my little dog. And so then he said, "Come on, let's go." So we just sort of rose. I just followed him. We rose up through the ceiling, up through the clouds, and then we sort of stopped at a high point hovering above our planet. And he let me turn around and look, this is the first time I could see our planet from that vantage point, and it was just amazing. It was stunning. It was like a beautiful pendant hanging in a sea of black ink. It was really quite amazing. So that was how he came, started the second sort of set of encounters that I had with him, which led to Dancing Forever with Spirit.
Wow, that's an amazing story. I just have one quick question before I turn the questions back over to Mark for a minute. As a lawyer, I've worked with lawyers for years. I used to be a court reporter. And as a lawyer, it wouldn't be the kind of story you'd normally hear from someone in the legal profession.
No, you're absolutely right. And of course, it all started before this second set of encounters, before Dancing on a Stamp. I mean, I was a corporate lawyer. I was very straight-laced, typical stuffed shirt lawyer, wearing navy pinstripe suits and strutting about. And I never talked about religion or spirituality or anything like that. And so nobody who knew me, my clients, my partners, colleagues, nobody could have guessed that I could have, written a book like Dancing on a Stamp. And so it was really quite different. But it was quite clear after I met Albert that I really had to change course in my life. And it was like a year after I met him that I decided to retire from the law practice and focus on other things, including writing books. And so it was quite an amazing change for me. And it was it's still, there's still a lot of my former friends and colleagues and partners who are shaking their heads, and they can't quite imagine that I actually wrote a book like Dancing on a Stamp. So it was quite a difference for me. And the second book is just a continuation of that. So it's really, you know, I'm Albert's messenger, and he convinced me that I should forget about my past, my lawyer past, and become his messenger and write books so that other people could hear what he had to say or what he had to show me.
Nice. Okay, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Ah, very cool. Thank you. Oh, great questions. You know, I think the fact that Albert actually materialized to you is very, very powerful. I always knew that that was possible, and I know there's stories where angels have taken on form mostly to intervene in different emergency situations. So it's really, really powerful to actually hear that a guide could actually manifest. And also interesting that as your connection grew, that it was less needed and more of just, you know, the general telepathic kind of communication, which I think is what most spiritual people are used to as far as communication with their guides. But I don't know if this is a question that you can answer, or here's a more interesting question for you. Are you actually communicating with Albert while you're on the radio right now, or is he kind of taking a vacation?
No, I'm not communicating with him right now. He, it would be too confusing if I'm listening to him and talking, trying to talk to you at the same time. So I don't try to connect with him, and he basically leaves me alone, and he doesn't try to coach me. So I can connect with him when I'm sort of by myself and sitting quietly in a room and go into a bit of a meditation, and then I sort of connect. So he's not constantly talking to me, and I'm not constantly talking to him, and I think that's good, because I think that would be kind of distracting for me. So he's not directly in the pipeline right now. You're gonna have to deal with me.
and that's you know, the wisdom that you have is amazing. So that's why we have you on the show. So thank you. Asking this question from the experience of what you've learned so far, and I don't know if too many people would have an answer to this anyways, but do you know if guides normally do come and visit the people that, you know, they're overseeing in physical form from time to time? I mean, you know, there's always that saying, you know, watch, you know, because you could be entertaining angels kind of stuff, but...
According to Albert, I asked him the question. He said that it's fairly rare, because our spirit guides don't generally appear in such a direct fashion as that he did with me. And he said that, of course, everyone has guides, as you know, and they're always with us, but their messages are usually a lot more subtle, you know, like intuitive flashes and whispers in your mind and coincidental events and things like that. So he said his contact with me was unusual, and he did it for a specific reason. He wanted for our initial meeting, he wanted to sort of ease me into the conversation, because if he had just sort of started talking as a voice in my head, I might have thought I was losing my mind. So this way he appeared physically, and it's sort of like, okay, there's a guy, and I actually touched him, and he felt physical, and here's a guy, an unusual sort of guy, because he was a homeless man, and so we started the conversation sort of in a natural sort of form, and then after that, when he started speaking to me by telepathy, I recognized his voice, and I was quite comfortable with it then. And so I think that's why he did it in the way he did. And he said, you know, his direct contact with me was to sort of, you know, ease me into it, and his real purpose was to answer my questions and reveal his truth in a way that I could put into a book, and he wanted me to write the book. That was the main purpose for him visiting me. He wanted to answer my questions, but he wanted me to pass those answers on to everyone. And so that's why he did it. But he said it's quite unusual. Most of the time, guides do not make direct physical contact with their souls on Earth, or even telepathic contact, although that's more common. But most people really have to sort of struggle to hear what their guides are saying, and that's very deliberate. They don't want to make it too easy for us.
It's a very interesting question to ask, and you know, I'll start by kind of saying that, you know, both the books of Dancing on a Stamp and Dancing Forever with Spirit are just such great gifts from you and Albert to the planet and to, spiritual individuals like ourselves. I want to ask the question, why now, and why is it so important that these books got out?
Well, that leads to sort of the first event after my initial astral traveling with Albert. The reason that they wanted me to write my books was spelled out to me clearly when I went on the spirit site to visit the Council of Wise Ones. And that was my first trip after my very first astral trip. Albert took me to the spirit side, and we went into this beautiful white city called Aglaia. And there in the Hall of Wisdom, we met with the Council of Wise Ones, which is this committee of 11 very wise and advanced souls whose job it was to oversee and coordinate all the incarnations on our planet. And so they'd asked Albert to bring me there, and so I went and appeared before them. And they had a message for me that they wanted me to include in my second book and spread around to everyone. The message was that humanity's at a sort of an inflection point. We have a very advanced technology, a very advanced civilization in that sense, but we haven't caught up with emotional intelligence. And so we have too many negative emotions, too much fear, anger, hate, jealousy, greed, and so on. And that results in a lot of grief and strife and conflicts and wars and genocide and the whole thing that we hear about in the news every night. And they said that we have to tread carefully because there have been other civilizations, human civilizations on our planet in the past that have risen up to a very high level, similar to where we are, like Atlantis and Lemuria, and they couldn't handle it. They ended up destroying your civilization. They crashed and burned. And the Council of Wise Ones says they don't want to see our civilization suffer the same fate. And so the message to humans is that we have to get rid of our negative emotions. We have to learn to increase our vibratory rates so that we can move up the vibratory ladder into a higher dimension. And in order to do that, we have to embrace love and compassion. And we have to stop abusing each other. We have to stop abusing the other creatures on our planet. And we have to stop abusing our Mother Earth, our planet herself. And that's the goal that they are striving for in terms of where our civilization is going. And they wanted me to write about it and spread the message back to my fellow humans. So that, in their view, time is becoming somewhat urgent because they're afraid that because we have all the weapons we have, the nuclear weapons and biological weapons and whatever, if they're unleashed, we could destroy all life on our planet. And they just don't want to see that happen to our civilization again. And so they've been sending an increased number of channeled messages to humans on Earth, like through me, and well, you two are part of the whole picture. And the message is the same. They're trying to get us to embrace love and compassion and reject negative emotions. And they're really increasing the number of messengers they have. And I'm just one of them, and that's the purpose of my two books. They wanted me to let everyone know, what we needed to do to change our direction and get on the right track.
A beautiful and very powerful message. I'm very familiar with some of those stories about how, and it's not just on Earth. It's actually happened in other parts of the universe, and that is, it's always the same story. It's an advanced culture, which, for the sake of argument, basically has the male energy and doesn't have enough balance with the female energy, because of it, it reminds me of the Star Trek, the Spock, logic and, that whole technology advancement, but not the emotional balance necessary to, keep the egos from the trigger. It's very great to see that the books are coming at a very timely, time in our history, and yes, a message that I've heard from a lot of different channels. So, great validation. Go ahead, Pam.
Thank you, Garnet. How many books are you going to write? And is the first question really is Dancing Forever with Spirit, is that out right now?
Yes, it is. It was officially released at the end of March, Pam. Okay. So it is out. It's available on all the online sites. It's slowly making its way into some of the bricks and mortar stores. It just mm-hmm. it seems to take a while to get through the distribution channel. Mm-hmm. But you can get it right now on like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the other good sites. And it's also available in ebook format, so that can be you can download it immediately. So it's out there, and I'm just trying to do my best to let everyone know that it's available.
Good. And you know, you mentioned earlier when you were talking to Albert originally that he told you that you had to write many books, or maybe that was the hierarchy that you were talking about. Someone told you you had to write several books. How many
books? Well, it was
Albert. It was
Albert,
okay.
Yeah, it was Albert, and he said that I'm going to have to write at least 4 books and maybe 5 or 6. And he would
let me know. We have a lot to look forward to.
Yes, and actually my third book has already been written. It was finished last fall, and it's in the publishing pipeline. And I don't have a firm release date, but I expect it's going to be sometime later this year or early of 2016. And so the third book is entitled Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And it's
nice.
more adventures with Albert. So there's more to come.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds great. Okay, I had another question here. Hold on a second. Oh, I know. You talked about rejecting negative emotions and how important it was for humanity to release their negativity and embrace love and kinder, more warm sort of sentiments. How would Albert suggest that we go about this? Is this just with pure intention, or is there a technique that he could share with us that he's shared with you already?
Yeah, there's no magic technique. It's really a matter of everyone who's trying to do it. Really, first of all, people have to sort of know where they should be going and realize that the negativity in their lives is holding them back and holding back their civilization. So the first thing is sort of awareness. It's like, okay, I really need to stop being so negative and stop my negative emotions and embrace love and compassion. And that's sort of awareness is the first step. And then it's really a matter of focusing. And one of the things that he said to me, and this was really brought home because to me when he took me on the spirit side to the Akashic Records, and he let me take a glimpse of what my life review will be, the one that I'll have when I die and cross over. He let me have a glimpse of a few of my past life segments, and the purpose there was to show that all too often when we say something or take an action, we don't spend enough time to think about how our words and actions affect other people. And all too often we can say things sort of off the cuff, sometimes even jokingly, and the person on the receiving end is very hurt and very distressed by what you said. And you may not be aware of it. And when he showed me some of my past life segments, I could see that quite clearly. So we have to sort of try to think about being considerate to the people that we interact with. Try not to be mean or say, you know, cruel things, and try not to act in a negative fashion. And try to, you know, spread love and kindness wherever you can with random acts of kindness. Those things are really important, because if you do something kind to someone else, they feel very happy about what you did, and they're inclined then to go out and spread that kindness to other people, and the thing kind of ripples across the civilization. So it's very powerful. But we really just have to be aware that negative emotions are pulling us down and causing a lot of conflict and grief and strife in our world, and that we have to focus on being kind and compassionate. And it actually does work, because after I met Albert, I was much more inclined to not get upset if somebody cut me off in the freeway, in the traffic, or if somebody said something negative to me, I wouldn't be as inclined to retaliate. And it's a matter of just sort of being aware that, you know, we're all souls traveling on a journey in human form on Earth, and we all have our own journeys to struggle with. And you know, if somebody crosses you up, chances are they're not really doing it intentionally. They're probably just stepping on your toes unintentionally, and you have to just forgive and forget and love them nonetheless. So there's no magic bullet, Pam. It's It's just a matter of people focusing on what they should be concentrating on and what they should be discarding. So it's not an easy task because I know before I met Albert, I would be one of the first ones to be honking my horn at somebody who cut me off in traffic. Now I don't do that. And that's just a simple example.
That's nice. Well, darn, I wanted a magic bullet.
I know you did. So do I.
Oh, well. Mark, you want to jump in here? Do you have any questions?
Yeah, so true. It's funny. I was kind of listening to you talk about all the books you have to write. I was like, you do remember you're retired, right?
Well, actually, I'm retired from my first career. I'm now into my second career, which is being an author, and so I quite enjoy it.
I figured you would. We kind of talked about it a little bit. We're kind of jumping around on the questions a little bit, but just to kind of bring it out on the air, I think one of the interesting things I heard or remember from reading into your books and everything is that there was this time period where, Albert was pretty much around you quite a bit, and then he kind of disappeared for a while. And, I guess the question I would have is, what was your feeling about, why he kind of disappeared for a while?
I think I wasn't sure initially, but I think I realize now that, he has his own agenda. And, of course, as we were talking about before, time on the spirit side and on the earth plane are just totally different. We have linear time on earth. There's the past, present, and future. And on the spirit side, everything just happens in one big now. And so, 100 years on earth is like a blink of an eye on the spirit side. So when Albert's away for 2 months, 2 months to me seems like a long time. For him, it was like, just what 1 second, please, and I'll be right with you, kind of thing. And he never did say why he wouldn't respond to me, but I know that he has a reason for everything, and he probably thought that I wasn't quite ready for my next set of adventures, and that when I was, then he would be there. And so I think that's what happened.
That's very cool. Thank you. So with the new book and the new travels you were doing with your guide, what do you think is the big aha surprise that just really blew your mind?
I don't think there's any one big surprise. There were a lot of different surprises as I went along. I was taken to a couple of different planets in our galaxy, and on one of them, on this water planet called Proteus, I ended up meeting with a dolphin and a whale, underwater. The subsea of this planet looked a lot like the subsea of Earth. It looked like some of my snorkeling adventures in the Caribbean, and so it was a bit of surprising to think that we somehow think that life on Earth is unique, and whether it's be humans or animals or whatever, and we're all sort of a unique little planet. And there was a bunch of sea life there on this water planet that looked very much like what we have on Earth. And in fact, these two cetaceans told me that a lot of the sea life that we have on Earth originated on their planet. And it was seeded by the ETs a long time ago when Earth and its oceans were amenable to having that kind of sea life. And so, these two, the dolphin and whale, said that they stayed in contact with their cousins on Earth, so they could communicate by telepathy with their whales and dolphins and other creatures on Earth. And so that seemed sort of amazing to me. And then they said that the reason that Albert brought me to meet them was that they wanted to tell the people back on Earth that they were very upset with how humans had been treating their relatives on Earth, over the centuries, the hunting and killing and trapping and capturing for sea parks, the whales and dolphins and the other creatures. And they were hearing from their cousins on Earth, how bad this was. It's gotten better in the last number of years with commercial whaling being curtailed in a number of countries, but it's still going on. They're still being trapped and caught up in fishing lines and all kinds of things. And their view was, they want to live in harmony with humans, don't understand why humans have been so abusive in the past, and they wanted me to take the message back that, look at why can't we just treat them with more respect and dignity, understand that they're very intelligent creatures, and they're not just sort of dumb animals that should be abused or used the way that humans see fit. So that was quite an amazing experience, actually, to visit these creatures in another planet who had a very intimate connection with the creatures on our planet. And it was a very strong message, and I only wish that every human could have listened to what they told me, and maybe we'd stop any of the remaining abuse that we heap on our whales and dolphins on Earth. So that was one of the amazing things. I mean, I could keep on going on, but there wasn't one thing, Mark, that sort of stood out. There was sort of like a whole series of amazing sights and adventures that I had, and they were all very significant and all had important messages for me and for everyone on Earth.
Thank you for that. You know, Ashley, let me just take a quick break, and then I'll come back and hit you with another question and turn you over to Pam. For everybody that's listening, you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. We're doing a special radio show this evening for our guest. And you can check out his books, Dancing Forever with Spirit and Dancing on a Stamp. Make sure to check those out. Both really great books as far as messages from his guide, Albert. So very, very powerful. To find out more about him, his links and the links for the other shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. You know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, how has your life changed personally, like your perspective or your experience of life now that you've been writing these books and working so closely with your guide?
Well, it's been quite a change, Mark. Before I was sort of a stressed out lawyer, and I didn't really think about other people and animals and our planet very much. I was just too busy with my law practice. So now things are different. I tend to look at people with a bit more compassion and understanding, realizing that, as I said, that they're just souls struggling with their journey on Earth just like I am, and that there's really no room for negativity. I know that I haven't conquered all of it for sure, but I really strive to sort of shut down my negative emotions, my anger, my immediate reactions when something goes wrong, and I try to close that down. So I really have changed my life, and I just think that I'm a better person for it, and I keep on trying to live what Albert has taught me, I'm getting better at it. But the more I see Albert, the more I feel inspired to do better and to try to spread his message to other people so that everyone can move, you know, down the same path. And that's what we all need to do. Is if everyone could hear his message directly, I think we would have a different world, like overnight. Unfortunately, he's not there to tell everyone, and he's sort of working through me and through a number of other people, and we have to do our best to try to spread his spiritual enlightenment to everyone on our planet. So, yeah, big change for me. A lot of people who knew me before I met Albert probably wouldn't recognize me very much right now because I'm just a different person. And I think for the better, for sure.
Yeah. Let me ask you one other question. I think this is something common that happens to a lot of people that have the ability to do different types of spiritual gifts, but there is this time when we kind of doubt ourselves that we're really, truly communicating, that we're actually, you know, we sometimes, like you had said earlier, if it wasn't for being eased into it and you just had a voice in your head, you probably would have thought you were going crazy. You know, is there times when you just have to take a step back and you wonder, you know, how real is all this? I mean, I get that it really is, but I also can go into those types of feelings sometimes.
Albert is just such a powerful and genuine figure in my life, you know, right from the first book and then all the way through to my astral adventures, that I just felt totally confident with him. I knew deep down inside that he was a real person. He was for real. What he was telling me was the truth, the real truth. And I've never, you know, really faltered from that. When I lost contact with him for a couple of months, I was concerned not that what he had told me wasn't true, but that I was concerned that maybe he wouldn't come back because I really wanted to continue the contact with him. But I've always felt that what he's told me was a genuine truth, and I felt very comfortable with that. And I've never ever had any question about am I dreaming? Am I hallucinating? Did it really happen to me? Because I know that it really did. And people, with my astral journeys, people have asked me, well, when you wake up in the morning and you remembered where you went, how do you know you just didn't dream it? And I said, because my memories of my astral trips were so much more vivid and clear to me and stayed with me for so many weeks after, much more so than any dream I've ever had or even any other real-life memory I've had. And of course, as you guys probably know, when I've had dreams, they all sort of disappear within 2 or 3 hours after I wake up. Didn't happen with my astral trips. They were still very clear so that I could sit at my computer and write about what I had seen. And they're still fairly clear. Some of the details are a bit fuzzy, but they're it's clear to me that this was a very real experience and not a dream. So,
wow, very, very powerful. Thank you. Go ahead, PM.
Did we do the break?
Yeah, we did it. I did a quick one.
Oh, all right. Well, quick enough, I guess. All right, Garnet. Well, good. I have another question I can ask you. How many adventures are involved in the second book? And to add to that question, in your third book, does it continue with the type of astral projection adventures, or is it changed? Is it different?
The third book is a continuation of my astral adventures with Albert, except it's different. He takes me to different places. I meet different people on the spirit side, so it's obviously different from the second book, but it's the same kind of a venue in the sense that he takes me on astral trips. And in the second book, well, there's probably a dozen or so. I'd have to count them up, how many different adventures he took me on. As I said, there was he took me to another planet. He took me to where there was a race of intelligent creatures that looked like spiders, who had been, their job was to monitor planets in the galaxy and determine when they might be ready to accept life that could be seeded there. And they told me that they had been watching Earth, and when Earth was ready a long time ago to accept life, they had contacted the ETs and got them to seed life on our planet. I went to one of the amazing experiences was getting to visit the new Earth in a higher dimension, which is really our planet exists right now, but in a higher dimension, and that's sort of the goal that we should all be shooting for. And Albert took me there, and I talked to a civilization that had made a mass ascension from our Earth a long time ago. And how that happened was that they were living in what is now Central America, and they were having a fairly peaceful, harmonious life, with nature and with other creatures. Most of their negative emotions weren't there, and they lived in a very nice, peaceful life. And what happened was one day, some of their scouts discovered there was a barbaric army of other humans from another land that was coming towards them to encroach in their territory. And this barbaric crew, they were vicious and violent, and they had weapons and so on. That was a great concern to this particular civilization because they didn't have any weapons. They had no need for them. They had no way to defend themselves. So they ended up with their leaders tapping into spirit to get some help, and spirit guided them to do a mass meditation in the meadow beside their village one day, and after an hour or so, the leaders just said, "Okay, ascend." And they were suddenly covered with fog. And when the fog dissipated, their village was still there as it was beside them, except the barbaric army was nowhere to be seen. They had actually ascended up to Earth in a higher vibration, where the barbarians didn't exist, and they've been living there ever since, and in a very idyllic civilization, very happy, very harmonious. No negative emotions, no crime, no violence, no hurt, and having very happy existence. That is where we should all aspire to go, but we have to increase our vibrations to get there. And there's been other humans who've made the transition, the shift, and others are trying to, and that's sort of the carrot at the end of the stick for humanity. If we get rid of our negative emotions, that's where we can end up, which is a very wonderful place to be. So that was one of the amazing adventures that Albert took me on and described in Dancing Forever with Spirit.
That sounds wonderful. Tell me about the concepts of world within worlds, worlds within worlds, or universes within universes. And on these astral trips, what was your concept, the conceptual vision of how these worlds were put together?
Well, the only time I traveled to a different dimension with Albert was when we went to Earth in a higher dimension, and it was just like traveling, you know, across vast distances. It sort of happened instantaneously. He took me through what he called the interdimensional doorway. That's the only time I went to visit somebody in a higher dimension. The rest of my trips were all basically on the Earth plane, the dense plane, except of course when I went to the spirit side, which is at the sort of the highest level, the highest vibration level. So Albert explained to me that the new Earth and the old Earth basically occupy the same space; they just have different vibrations, and which seems sort of strange to us. But the spirit side, which is at the highest vibration, is just all around us as well. Like, it's not sort of over there and we're over here. It's just all around us, and we can't see it or perceive it, just like we can't see or perceive the new Earth or the people who live there. But when we, you know, when we get there, when we increase our vibrations to that level, then we'll see it. So it's really quite amazing. There are worlds within worlds, and galaxies within galaxies, and universes within universes. It's basically what he said was there's an infinite number of different dimensions in our universe.
And they all vibrate at different frequencies.
Yep.
So they all exist at the same place at the same time.
Yes, yeah.
So what you're saying is, by releasing the negative emotions, which is what you talked about earlier, and increasing feelings of love and bliss and ecstasy, you can shift the vibrations of your body to the point where you can move from this dimension to another one.
That's exactly right. And in order to make the transition to the new Earth, we have to have our vibrations match that of the new Earth, or we can't get there. And in order to decrease our vibrations, we have to be, I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not so easy to do, is we have to get rid of our negative emotions and embrace love and compassion. And to the extent that we can accomplish this and totally rid ourselves of negative emotions, then we can make the transition. And it doesn't have to happen to everyone at once. It can happen individually. So one day, Pam, you can just make the shift and you're gone, and the rest of us are still here struggling. You know, that's literally how it can happen. And sometimes it's done in groups, but it doesn't have to be everyone all at once. We can do it individually. And that has been happening over time, according to Albert.
Interesting. And do you think it's possible to move back and forth and not even know it? Now, that's a strange question, I know, but there are times when I feel that way, where I feel like I am really operating in the same place, doing the same things I normally do, but at a much higher level. And then other times it drops back down. Now, we're talking about, obviously, the ups and downs. We're not talking about the ups and downs of daily emotions. We're talking about extremely high frequency and then feeling like, okay, I'm back again. Can you explain that, other than the ups and downs of daily life? Is it possible to move into different dimensional frequencies all within the same day?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. And I haven't directly discussed this with Albert, but from what I understand, from what he tells me about other things, I think that's entirely possible. And I think that it's probably a case of, the vibration levels are, you can move them up for a while, but then for whatever reason, because you still have lingering negative emotions and you haven't fully embraced love, that you sort of slide back a bit and back into the lower dimension. So I think that's absolutely entirely possible. And of course, the trick is to try to, once you get up there, is to stay there. But that's easier said than done. And for a lot of people, I think they probably do take that little quick bump up and then back down, and probably don't even realize it. You're fortunate because you sort of you realize what's going on, or you know that something is happening, even though you can't quite explain it. So yeah, I think that is possible.
I think my low periods are caused by the fact that I'm renovating my kitchen right now.
I know what you mean.
Anyway, thank you for that answer. That was lovely. Mark, do you have anything else to ask? Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I just had to unmute. you had said earlier that when you were doing all these different trips to visit different beings and learn about different things, and you said that most of that you're doing most of that on the Earth, or were you actually traveling to other planets?
No, I was traveling to other planets, but those other planets, for the most part, were on the same vibratory level as our Earth. Yeah, so they were on the dense plane, just like Earth, except they were light years away in our galaxy, and so that was where he took me for the most part. But of course, there are other, every one of those planets I visited also has a counterpart in other dimensions as well. But as far as I could tell, they were all basically on the lower, dense matter plane that Earth is on, and it was, and the travel to get there was virtually instantaneous. I mean, it's like the power of thought, and thoughts, they're not limited by the speed of light. They can just get from one place right across the galaxy in a split second. So it was quite amazing. But I do think that those, and not only the planets, he also took me into a spacecraft manned by some ETs that was orbiting around Earth, and they were sort of existing on our Earth plane. They were very advanced. They had faster than light, spacecraft warp drives, and their job had been to monitor Earth ever since life, when humans first arrived, so eons ago. And they were, one of many races that have been, monitoring Earth. And they are basically, their craft are the UFOs that a lot of people report, seeing. And they were quite dismayed as well by the fact that they didn't want our civilization to crash and burn like others. And so they were trying their best to help us in whatever way they could to get over this hump. And they were, as I say, I think they were on the Earth plane dimension of dense, dense matter. Although I think that I suspect that they could, with their craft, travel through different dimensions. But I'll have to explore that the next time I encounter them, if I do.
So you had mentioned that during the time when you were traveling, and I think this is what's discussed in the book, Dancing Forever with Spirit. You had gone to a higher dimension on the Earth itself.
Yes.
And besides the fact that, the people there didn't have any violence or negativity or anything like that, what do you remember that kind of stood out for you the most about that journey?
Well, it's just that the people were so happy. They didn't have careers or jobs. They didn't really have to do anything. They spent their time, learning things and studying, other planets and universe and other dimensions and increasing their knowledge. They didn't have to worry about, 9-to-5 job or any of that sort of stuff. And they had everything provided for them. It was a very idyllic society. And they had learned to slow down the aging process. So they lived for a couple of 300 years. They had learned how to ward off most diseases, and their medicine was skilled enough so that whatever sort of traumatic injuries they might have come into, through accidents or whatever, that they could repair their body. So they didn't really have any of the worries that we have in our civilization. And they could devote themselves to, loving each other and and learning about you know, what's out there in the universe. So it was very, very pleasant, and something that, you know, when I walked out of there, or when Albert took me out of there, I thought, you know, that would be a great place to live, and I'd really like to get there someday, and I'd like everyone else to get there too. So it was just a wonderful feeling.
What is that group of people called, and are we able to communicate with them for guidance at all?
Don't know. I didn't get into that. They said that they knew what was going on in Earth, and they could see where we were and where we had to go. They didn't mention that they communicated directly with us, so I don't know if they can or not. In fact, I'm not sure that that's their job. I mean, the job of communicating with humans is really the spirits in the spirit realm. So I don't know if they got into that or not, but they certainly could observe what was going on in our planet, and they knew where I was coming from, and they, you know, basically said that they agreed with the Council of Wise Ones that we need to, you know, shift up our vibrations and discard our negative emotions so that other humans could get where they are and live in a peaceful existence. So they were quite sympathetic to our plight, but I don't think that they were able to get directly involved in terms of helping us.
So, you know, as far as promoting and everything like that, I assume all your books are available on Amazon and stuff like that as far as networks. Why don't you go ahead and give out your website to everybody?
Okay, GarnetSchulhauser.com. On my website, I have buy links to all the popular online stores like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and I have some, you know, for other countries. And so you could just simply click on there, and you'll get right to the buy links. You can also buy the book directly from my publisher, Ozark Mountain Publishing. And on my website, there's synopsis of both books and other information, like you can tap into book videos I've made for both the books and other information. And my email address is there, and I'd love to hear from anyone who has a comment or a question.
Very cool. Go ahead, Pam.
Well, I have a question, Garnet, about putting a few of these things together. And this always happens to me, I think, when I talk to you. That is, for example, years and years ago, when I was in high school, actually, I read a book called The Cat People. And I don't remember the name of the author, but I remember the name of the book. And it was supposed to be a channeled book where this woman visited this planet with where the evolved species were cats. Then, you know, as time goes on, I start studying Egyptology and the concept of all of these gods with different animal heads. Then I read a book by, you know, it was called Earth, The Living Library, and it was one of those Palladian series. This was also many years ago, and I think her name was Barbara, it wasn't Barbara Brennan, it was something very similar to that, though. She wrote Bringers of the Dawn and Earth, The Living Library, and there were three or four of them that were Pleiadian books that talked about how Earth was a planet that was seeded by all of these evolved species of different kind of animals to create this library where people could study all the different species from all of these different planets. And it was so fascinating because it seems like so much of what you've said tonight relates to that story. What do you think about it? And I know you haven't read it, but...
Yeah, no, I haven't read the book. But it's clear from my adventures with Albert that, you know, life on Earth was seeded from other places, other planets in the galaxy or other galaxies. And it was done so by you know, extraterrestrials with their advanced spacecraft, and they basically literally, you know, brought the creatures and the people over from other planets and dropped them on Earth, and so that clearly did happen. I know I haven't run into the cat creatures anywhere. Doesn't mean they don't exist. I just haven't been there. But I'm sure that there are all kinds of you know, creatures, intelligent creatures like that may look like cats or dogs or grasshoppers or snakes or whatever. I mean, it you know, everything's possible. Albert says that there's like literally, you know, millions and millions and millions of different life forms in our galaxy. And some of them are way more advanced than we are and are able, have been able to travel, you know, through interstellar space to come to Earth. And so, and Earth has been visited by a lot of these civilizations for, you know, right since day one, all kinds of different civilizations. And so the fact that some of our civilizations have taken, like the Egyptians, taken to worshiping cats, may have arisen from the fact that some of the advanced cats creatures, pay them a visit and help them with their, maybe with their buildings or the technology. I can't say for sure because Albert did not take me there, but I think there's a lot of truth to what you say, Pam.
Okay, well, thank you for that opinion. That's great. Now, in one last quick thing before we close the show, and I'll turn it over to Mark first and he can close the show. I just have a question about a reading that I did once. It's a reading that I did for my neighbor who had passed away, and I was talking to his wife. He was a professor of anthropology and a brilliant, brilliant man. And when I did this reading, it was a year after he had died, he was in this job on this other planet with this species that were very much like the aliens that you'd see from a Steven Spielberg movie, only much taller, very tall beings. And he was working with the anthropological growth of all of these different civilizations on these different planets, which I thought was just absolutely magnificent. Is there such a group that sort of monitors, you mentioned it briefly, that monitors all of these different groups? You were talking about spiders, I think, at the time. But,
yeah, there is.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, there is a something called the Galactic Council, and they're the people that sort of deal with all the different life forms in our galaxy. And when they find when they're alerted to the fact that a planet is ready to accept life, they will then go about to arrange to seed the life. And so they sort of oversee all that sort of thing. And so this may be he may have been on assignment to the Galactic Council. Don't know, but it sounds like it's absolutely true. As Albert has said, we can when we're in spirit form, we can actually travel to all the different planets in the galaxy or in the universe, and look at watch the life forms, decide where we might next want to incarnate, and we can incarnate into any of these life forms. We're not stuck with being humans on this planet. And so I'm not sure whether your professor was actually incarnated into a physical life form or whether he was dealing with him in a spiritual realm, but that's entirely possible for sure.
Thank you for that opinion. That's beautiful. Okay, Mark, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Thank you, Garnet.
All right, sounds good.
You're welcome.
Yeah, always great. Great questions, PM. Okay, so, we always like to close out the show with a question, and that is, normally I would say, what is the biggest lesson you've learned in life so far? But we kind of covered that for the last couple interviews with you. So I'll just move it to a different kind of focus and just say, what really has been important to you or changed for you since you've written the new book?
The biggest change is just to realize how life on Earth works, and the fact that we've come here, Mark, to learn and experience things, and that before we came here, we had a life plan that we sort of set out the major points of our life and what we wanted to experience, and but because we have free will, we will stumble around and go off course. But the comforting thing is that no matter what we do or how many times we mess up or make mistakes, we always end up back in the spirit side, which is really home for us, and where we can regroup and plan our next incarnation and whether it be on Earth or elsewhere. So it's really comforting for me to know absolutely and definitively that I know where I'm going when my physical body dies. And so that just puts a whole new light on my life, and it just makes it so much more enjoyable for me. So that's sort of the big thing for me. And I think a lot of people out there are probably had the same concern, you know, like what really happens to me when I die? Do I just disappear or do I go on and into some afterlife? And that has been answered for me in the affirmative.
Thank you. Well, as always, we love having you on the show, and very excited about your third book that's going to be coming out. And as we mentioned this evening for everybody, his first book is Dancing on a Stamp. His second book is Dancing Forever with Spirit. Wow, we've got a big echo going on.
Wow.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and thanks, Pam, and I'll just say goodnight to everybody.
Goodnight, everyone.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, goodnight. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It was such a pleasure.